the best thing to do is to walk around the hole, get on the same side of the problem and look at the problem in front of you, and solve it together.
Welcome to the Christ United Quarantine Podcast, the show where we get advice, guidance, and inspiration to help us make it through this, just one day at a time. I'm your host, Ashley Danner, digital content manager here at the church, and a lifelong student who's coming up on her very first wedding anniversary. Jeez. And I can tell you, this is not how I thought I'd be celebrating it this year. In today's conversation, I get to sit down digitally with one of our senior pastors, Reverend Chris Dowd, and his wife, Whitney. They've both been certified in Prepare and Enrich, a couples counseling method and assessment tool. And so today, we're going to get a chance to chat about what marriage looks like during quarantine. We hope that this discussion will give us all some direction, helpful advice, and encouragement as we all head off into a new week of our new normal. Chris, Whitney, welcome. I'm so glad to have you here with me today.
Thanks, Ashley. It's good to be here.
Thanks, Ashley. Yeah.
So I ask my guests the same question every time I start the show. Have y'all picked up any new hobbies during time at home, or any new fascinations that you'd like to share?
Whitney, you go first.
I think each of us has been able to take the opportunity to focus on some of our hobbies or things that we've wanted to spend more time on since we have a lot more time lately. So Chris has called it Pandemic Project Central around the house. We've been doing some remodeling and painting and things. Chris, you've been doing what?
Oh, I've picked up a meditation practice. I'm on, nice. Today is 28 days in a row of meditating. By far a record for me.
Yes, it's awesome. I'm a big fan of that as well. And of him meditating, that is. Sure. I don't meditate, but it's awesome for him. And then we've been able to focus more on, we like to exercise each day and we like to do that together. So we've been able to have more time to get that done.
So that's awesome.
Yeah, it's been nice.
I feel like a lot of those books that you read that talk about like making healthy habits or what have you, it's like 30 days or 60 days to make a habit, right?
Okay.
So I feel like so many people are going to come out of this period of time with like a new, hopefully healthy habit. You know, you've almost got 30 days in meditation. Hopefully,
all right, two more days and I should have developed it, right?
Right. Then it'll stick for sure. For good. So I'm excited to get to talk to you guys today about marriage in the time of quarantine. So what have been some things for you guys that you've noticed about your own experience during quarantine, during, you know, physical isolation from other people? What are some joys and challenges in this particular season that have been kind of bubbled to the surface?
You know, so of all the couples that I've counseled over the years at various stages of their own relationship, at various stages of life, there's a pretty consistent theme that a healthy relationship comes down to communication and conflict resolution. Mm-hmm. I think for me, that's even more true during a period of time when you can't get away from each other, right? I mean, there's no individual. I mean, I leave the house to go to the church most weekdays, but I'm only there for a couple of hours. And obviously Whit's home with the boys all the time. So in our relationship, the ability to do both those things, communicate in a healthy way and work through conflict in a healthy way, has been pretty vital.
Mm-hmm. I have been really grateful that we really like each other's company because we're around each other all the time. Mm-hmm. So it's been very good that I find my family to be very interesting people and I want to know more about them. And I'm getting all kinds of opportunities to learn more about them and what little quirks that they have. Mm-hmm. It's challenging also because I think sometimes, you know, we cannot be all things to each other. So I need to make sure that I am developing relationships outside of our marriage as well, because he can't be, my girlfriend and my best friend and my husband and dad all for me. You know, we have to have other people in our lives. So that has been a little bit challenging, is to remember to maintain lots of relationships in addition to, you know, our marriage.
Yeah, I've kind of forced Blake to be a lot of those things, and it doesn't always work out. And I mean, for reasons unknown, he still refuses to help me cut my hair and braid it for me when I need it. So I just, you know, we've had to work that out. So I know a lot of our families in our community at this time are functioning fully for probably the first time with both partners at home. You know, at least lots of people have dual careers, or at least somebody who leaves most of the time for their main career, and lots of kids now at home. So as change restructures our routines, I've heard about some feelings of responsibility disparity. And what advice can we give our community's partners, especially parents who are both at home, to share the domestic effort, if you will? How do you work out who's going to do what and to what degree in a healthy way? Especially, you know, one of these reasons I end up hearing about it, especially if you don't feel like that's currently happening.
Yeah, I think we've had the opportunity several times in our relationship to reevaluate what's going on at home. When we first, you know, when we had Max, he's 13 now, we were both working full-time. Then when we moved out to Henrietta, I was a full-time stay-at-home mom, which was a huge adjustment. I've worked part-time, but mostly I've worked at home, very, very part-time. So then now, you know, Chris's schedule's adjusted a little bit. And so, like you said, everybody's home all the time. And so maintaining the house mm-hmm. is more challenging, right? Like that conversation of cleaning when your kids are home is like brushing your teeth and eating Oreos at the same time. So we've had to, every transition in life, we've had to get really, really specific about what all the tasks are that are required to maintain the house. And then also get specific about what is important to each of us. And what we've learned over the years is different things are important to each of us. Mm-hmm. You know, I am a clean counter person. I don't want anything on the counter. And Chris likes everything really convenient. So he wants everything out because, you know, that like it's just easier that way. Why would you put it in a cabinet when you're just going to use it again, you know, in a couple hours? Mm-hmm. And so to get through all of what's important to us about the way the house looks or is maintained without any kind of value judgment about the other person's, how they like things to happen, is hard, I think. Mm-hmm. And it requires a lot of communication. One thing I'm very grateful for with Chris is that he has always been super supportive. I've heard other stay-at-home moms say, you know, that their spouses are like, well, what did you do all day? Well, mm-hmm. I think in the time of quarantine, everybody's getting a real nice picture of what you do when you're home all day, right? It's like a constantly feeding somebody and picking up things and cleaning something. So being sure that you're valuing the other person's contributions. And then if you feel like there's an imbalance, having a conversation about it, asking for what you want. And then, as a friend of mine used to say, celebrating the no. So if what's really important to me is that the counters are clear and it's not important to Chris and he's not willing to do it, then I have to decide, do I just want to do it myself and let go of, you know, what the meaning attached to him not wanting to do that are, or he can say, oh, sure, I can do that. I don't care enough. You know, that's fine by me. So mm-hmm. making sure we have a respectful conversation about what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one of the like essential aspects of healthy communication is to be able to ask for what you want and need in a non-judgmental way. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite verses in the New Testament is in Ephesians, where it talks about speaking the truth in love. So sometimes we can be so loving that we have a hard time speaking the truth, asking for what we need and want in this case. And sometimes we are real good at speaking the truth and it can come across as maybe sharper or more judgmental than we intend it to. Mm-hmm. And I think as everybody's adjusting to this new way of doing life, however long it's going to last, it's every relationship is an ongoing, negotiation is probably not exactly the right word, but compromise certainly would be. I heard a very wise grandmother say one time that a relationship is never 50-50, or very rarely is it 50-50. It's always 60-40 one way or 30-70 the other way. And accepting that that's the case, and that our individual circumstances are going to affect how much we contribute to what's going on around the house at that on that given day is really important. But to be able to live that out in a way that one person is not overly burdened requires being able to ask your partner for what you want. And you know, that's why it comes down to so much of the time, communication and conflict resolution. Mm-hmm. Communication being just the ability to articulate what needs to change or what needs to happen. And then conflict resolution to come to some kind of an agreement when you don't see things the same way. Mm-hmm. And things that we could probably just let go in any other normal time when one partner or both is away from the house for 8 to 10 hours a day is not possible now, right? Mm-hmm. So that theme of communication and conflict resolution is really important. And on the conflict resolution front, there's this method of communication that I've heard described several different ways, redemptive communication. One, in the context of theology, they talk about nonviolent communication, which is you start with a very simple formula. So like if I was having a conflict with Whitney, let's take the counter example. Mm-hmm. So when you ask me to take everything off of the counter, it makes me, I feel like you're not hearing my need for convenience, right? Something as simple mm-hmm. as that. I'm asking you to be okay with me leaving my razor and razor brush on the counter. Right. For an example.
Yes. And our, yeah, yes. This is a real life example.
Real life example, right? And so, and then her responsibility would be to just to repeat back to me what I said, not to evaluate it, not to assess it, not to put a value judgment on it. So how, are you okay doing that, Whit?
Oh, so I'm saying, so when I am constantly asking you to pick stuff off the counter, it makes you feel like I'm not appreciating the reason that you do it. So we need to come to what you'd like to leave on the counter is the razor and the brush, whatever that thing is that you use. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Yes, that's exactly what I said.
Oh, I said, sure, but could they be ones that look pretty? Right? And so now he has the most beautiful razor and really yeah. nice brush and everybody's happy, right?
Yeah. Yes.
And
yes.
And then I was like, and here's a bin labeled his, and that's where you put all your things. So it's super convenient and I get my clean counters and everybody's happy, right?
Yeah. No, and that's exactly right. So it took me doing some things, it took her doing some things. And I, honestly, now I walk in the bathroom and it's very calm in there. It looks very peaceful.
Yeah. As Blake says, everything looks like it's supposed to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, yes. Exactly.
That's Blake's perspective as well, Whitney. And Chris, you and I are a lot more similar. I have a paring knife and a small cutting board that likes to live on our kitchen island in case of an apple.
Well, yeah. Exactly. Yes. Yeah. You never know when you're going to want an apple.
Of an apple. And, you know, that some people think that that's a little cluttered. And I totally recognize that. There's a day when my candles and my decorative pillows are all where they need to be. And, you know, some days they're not.
But then that same method of communication can be used for stuff that really is kind of a bigger deal, like with the mm-hmm. tiny humans living in the house. So mm-hmm. if my work schedule is not organized in such a way that Whitney has what she needs during this time, then that same method of communication can help us work out a schedule that works for the whole family. Mm-hmm. That's the stuff, because it's about articulating what you need without having to judge where the other person is in the conflict. That's a really difficult relationship skill to learn, because typically we'll be processing conflict in the heat of emotion. Mm-hmm. And so it's easy for me to say, oh my gosh, why do you care what the counters look like? No one's in here except you and I, you know, but that's not helpful, because that's not like she is in a different place than I am with that particular issue. And so for me to spend my energy attacking her position or judging where she is actually not going to be helpful long term for the relationship.
Right. It's that whole like value, putting a value on it. Like, why do you have to be such a mess? Or, you know, why do you have to be so overly, you know, specific about controlling about things, right? And so we've like, I mean, it's just about what the counter looks like, but then build it up into something huge. So for us, at least, this is kind of where we started. Learning about conflict resolution was something that seems like pretty small, right? Because, you know, you practice those skills, you know, and you get good at it, and then you can work it on to more serious things, right?
And I'm laughing because so early on in our relationship, we had a therapist who was very no nonsense, and she's still one of the dearest people in my personal history. She was really important to me personally and to our marriage. And there was a time when we just any conflict we had, we took to her. Like, we couldn't talk about it in between sessions, and we would articulate, you know, what it is, whatever it was, you know, who takes out the trash, who cleans the litter box, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And we would just intentionally have to learn with another much more experienced person how to communicate about these things that were conflicts. Because this isn't a method of communication or a process that is modeled for very many people. You know, we don't, this is not what we learned growing up for most of us. Mm-hmm. So it helps to have an elder who is, who's gone through this and can help point out your own blind spots as you're learning how to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really resonate with that. And sometimes it's hard, especially as a young married person. I feel like my only, person that I have is a parent, in a lot of situations, because my contemporaries have all either aren't married or have been married just as long as me and should not be giving me any advice. It's why I think the church community is so stinking important when it comes to starting marriages, because there's somebody out there who's done it and been there, and they probably live three streets away.
Right.
And you just need to know who you can call.
So with any couple who's going to get married, then if I'm going to do the wedding, we go through the prepare and rich thing, and it's anywhere from 8 to 10 hours of meetings before the wedding itself. And we spend a ton of time talking about communication and conflict resolution. And I make them, you know, role play this method of communication, because it does feel so unnatural. So it does feel so artificial. The first few times you do it, you know, once it becomes second nature eventually. Mm-hmm. I like the term that I just read it a couple of days ago, actually, redemptive communication. Like, this kind of communication works whether you're having a issue about parenting, whether you're trying to teach your kids how to deal with their own arguments. It works if you're having a heated discussion about the family budget for the year, or you know, or something as seemingly mundane as what personal hygiene items do we keep on the bathroom counter? You know, it works in all places.
Mm-hmm. Well, this seems like a perfect moment to take a quick break and share a few fun facts with our audience. So, of course, they're wedding themed. Mm-hmm. this episode. So, I don't know if you guys utilized anything like this, but I know that I did. You know, these websites that kind of help you keep your life together during wedding season, where you can download various Excel documents and, you know, get different ideas. And this one's called Wedding Wire. And so they have a touch point with hundreds of thousands of couples every year. And so they did a survey, and just to get the width and breadth of kind of what couples are doing these days. And I thought some really funny statistics popped up there. One is that December is one of the most popular months in the U.S. to get engaged. which is, you know, Christmas is cool. So is New Year's. Can you imagine people who just got engaged this past December?
Oh, geez.
And then also along that line, May is the third highest ranked month to get married in the U.S. Well, and I have been to more than one Zoom wedding in the last month. Yes. People who are going to get married anyways right now and then just throw a party in October. Which is funny. One of my best friends just did this and she's actually really excited because more people are actually going to get to come to her now reception in October than previous. A lot of people were kind of hung up and now they're not. Their schedules have opened up.
God makes all things work for good.
Exactly. And then another funny stat is, one in four couples right now, met online. So like didn't meet through a network or anything other than possibly an app. And 49% of newly engaged couples already have a pet. Which I feel like every book or show like tells me that's a bad idea. But, like everybody's still doing that. And then 71% of couples are dating more than 2 years before getting engaged. Which is just isn't what me and Blake did because we met so much later in life. But you know, quote later in life. than my Bible relative, buddies right? from back home. Yeah. Who all got married at 22 and I've just felt, you know, like an old maid. So those are my wedding facts. That's what I've got. Those are the
those
least
are really interesting. We got engaged in December.
Yes, we did.
Yes, we did. Well, we got married in August, but, and it's also what's making me laugh right now is that I was just telling our oldest that, his dad and I have been together so long that I remember giving Chris a fact and him saying, how do you know that? And I said, well, I looked it up online. And he was like, what is this voodoo online? What do you mean you looked it up on the computer? What does that mean? What is the internet? It's just a fad.
Just a fad. I mean, it's so true. They're kids these days like have no concept of not being able to access any information that they find necessary to access.
Right. On their phone.
Uh-huh. Instantaneously. Right, I mean, Just anything like, about don't wonder. Anybody. Just answer the question. Just look it up. There is a right answer and we can find it in 2 seconds, no problem. So
it's just bonkers.
Yes. It's totally crazy.
It's great. So as we do marriage in quarantine, what advice? This kind of relates to the previous question, but I think it kind of plays out in a different way sometimes. Mm-hmm. What advice do you give us out there about how to manage boundaries? And not just boundaries of space, but boundaries of time and boundaries of, I mean, you know, we've already talked about kind of, you know, essentially chores or who's managing the kiddos, but while also maintaining healthy marriage connections, because, you know, lots of people are used to a routine of being away from their spouse for, you know, like you said, 8 to 10 hours, which a lot of stuff happens in that time. You know, sometimes you can let a conflict simmer down during that time, or sometimes you can, you know, get some head thinking space. I'm married to a very introverted 2 on the Enneagram, and I'm a very extroverted 2 on the Enneagram as well. So we have some very specific needs that play out very differently in how we spend our days. So what do you have to say to people who are wondering about that?
So I think it's very important, first of all, that when it comes to the question of how to manage boundaries, that first of all, you have to have them and not feel bad about having them, right? I mean, being married doesn't mean especially in quarantine, that you have to do everything together all the time or that you have to like the same things. In fact, you know, being an individual and your spouse or partner being an individual and then you coming together and doing things together, all three of those pieces are important. So like, for instance, the meditation practice that I mentioned, for me, it works best to get up early and do that because once people start moving in the house, then it's very hard to carve out 15 minutes where there's zero chance of interruption. You know what I mean? So having the boundaries is important. The second thing I would say is that honoring your partner's boundaries is really important. So, you know, with, even if she's awake when I get up to go do the meditation thing, she stays in bed and kind of reads whatever she's reading for that morning, blogs or news or whatever, and just lets me have that time. Likewise, she's got a couple of groups of moms that she engages with online, and I make sure that me and the boys are not around her when she's trying to engage in that time. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is to stick to them. Once you've figured out what your boundaries are, and once you've got a partner that honors your boundaries, like maintaining those practices that keep you healthy is really important. Because you're not as good a partner if you don't have those boundaries for yourself.
Yeah. And I think what helped us was, looking at the day, and I was just thinking about when you're gone 8 to 10 hours a day and then come home and then you need me time, I would be like, are you kidding me? You've just been gone. The kids are only up so many hours in the day, especially when they were little. I'm like, I can't afford to have you gone again. Like, I need some relief. I need some time to go away. And finding, so this has been a creative way for us to do it, where you get up earlier than everybody, and then that fills needs for you. And what also I was thinking of while you were talking is we walk pretty regularly, and we walk down to the elementary school, and one of the times the family was walking, I saw the area of the schoolyard where I stand and wait for Sam, and I started crying, and he asked why, and I said, well, I miss that feeling of when you used to come out of the school and I was so excited to see you and hear about what was going on with your day. And I was like, I started laughing. I said, basically, I want to miss you. I need you to go away so I can miss you. Really, like, remembering how that feeling of going away and then coming back is I like that, and I need to honor that for myself. So it's okay that I cannot be around everybody all of the time. You know, mm-hmm. I used to feel a lot of pressure over, like, oh, just enjoy every minute. I'm like, but what I don't enjoy every minute. You know, mm-hmm. I want to enjoy moments throughout the day that I get to have with my family. But every moment is too much pressure. So, right. I need to go. I like to walk by myself and have it be quiet. I like to listen to music. There's other things that I like to do, and so that way, when you come back together, it's like you're excited to see each other again instead of it being a constant. Constant weight on mm-hmm. you. So mm-hmm. I think identifying that, and I used to be jealous. Chris used to run. You still run, but used to run with more regularity. And I used to be so jealous that he would go do that. And then he said, well, like, you can do that too. You know, if you want to run, then, you know, we will figure out a way to make that happen if that's what's important to you. So I think figuring out what it is that feeds your soul alone is really important. And then making space and time to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the readings at our wedding was by Khalil Gibran, the prophet, from The Prophet on Marriage. And there's a great phrase that Gibran writes in that poem, let there be spaces in your togetherness. Because that's where, you know, God can move in those spaces, and you need the space from each other. A healthy connection cannot be enmeshment, because when we're enmeshed, then we lose ourselves in each other. And that's not a healthy relationship. Mm-hmm. So boundaries and space and alone time are part and parcel of a healthy connection. Mm-hmm. It's trickier when you're quarantined, mm-hmm. clearly. But if you don't carve that out, then you know, my experience is that, you know, if I don't carve out that time for me, that I show up in the relationship a little grumpier than I want to. Mm-hmm. Things that don't normally bother me would bother me. And I go back to that image of spaces in your togetherness, because I think that's really important. Even the strongest, tallest, most healthy trees have space between them. Mm-hmm.
I love that. And I feel like the most difficult part, I hear of is not necessarily people realizing that that's something their partner needs. It's figuring out how to communicate that in a way that doesn't make them feel unwanted or unneeded. You know, Blake is so hesitant to say, you know, I'm going to go in this room and you can stay in this room. And I'm going to go read a book. And I'm fine with that. I'm so excited for him to do that and for me to, you know, essentially pull my head up and go, oh, yeah, we have been in the same room for 10 hours. Yeah.
Right.
Go do your thing. But I think we're especially just trying to kind of like you were talking about previously of hearing the other person's need and repeating it is just kind of signaling to that person, oh, no, you matter. You know,
right.
And
right.
If you only bring it up by the time that you're angry, it's a lot harder to do that.
Well, it comes out a lot differently. Yes. So we like to joke that we've chased two different therapists into retirement. It's just coincidence that they retired.
Sure, it is.
But the second one we had Max by this point, and we were talking about like when Max would gravitate to me or gravitate to Whitney, then the other one, like working through, do I feel like I'm not jealous about my child wanting their mom, but man, it would be nice if he wanted to hang out with me or sit in my lap while we're watching the movie this time. And she said something I thought was really helpful. She said, if he is going to Chris, that means he's had enough of Whitney, but he's had enough of Whitney because she showed him enough love. Like he's gotten what he needs. And so he feels safe and secure in going to hang out with dad for a little bit. And that totally reframes what it means to have some alone time. Like if you have a healthy relationship where you're connected and connected deeply, then it's okay that you're not hanging out all the time next to each other, you know?
She used to call also saying he's full of you. Like, yeah, you were together the whole day. So he's full of you. And now he needs some time with dad. I remember that same conversation. And I think also for me personally, like figuring out what it is that I like or what I need and what gives me energy and then giving myself permission to do that. Like I learned during quarantine that I like painting rooms. I don't like not artistic painting, but like painting the walls and painting things. Well, and I was thinking like, who likes painting? It's like, well, I actually kind of like painting. And you know what happens when I pick up a paintbrush in my house? Everybody else finds other things to do because they don't like painting. And so it's like this repetitive motion. I'm watching something change. I have this sense of accomplishment. And then like, I get really energized by that. And learning that people can be energized by having some alone time, I think was a reframing for me that's just what some people need. And then you want to come back together and have conversations. So both and not because when she said he's had enough of you, it wasn't like he's had enough of you.
No, no.
It was like, no, he's had enough of your time and attention. And now he needs something from Chris. So yes, that's good. Right?
And she framed it as a tremendous compliment.
Right.
Like, Mom, you've clearly given him what he needs today. Uh-huh. Well, that's a really awesome way to look at it.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, I love that. That's so sweet.
Right. Yeah, it really was. Right before she retired.
She was worn out. She had given all she had.
I've had enough of you two.
Yes, I am full up.
In a very different way.
You have made me so secure that I will now leave.
Right, exactly. I have plenty of your love. I'm ready for something else.
So to that point, like I was wondering, are there any ways that specifically you would want to impart to people that while people have a shot right now, while you are home, like different ways that you can be investing in and taking intentional time to strengthen your marriage, other than just making it through this, you know, sometimes they say that like, if you can make it through a move, you can, or if you can make it through a this or a that, but, you know, what are some ways that people could be injecting some specific investment in their marriages at this time?
What I've appreciated about us is that we're very curious about the other person, you know, how they interpret what is happening, and not assuming that you know what they're thinking all of the time. So we ask mm-hmm. each other a lot of questions. Well, what did you think about that? And how do you look at that? And what does that bring up for you? And I think staying curious, we talk a lot. even when it's not quarantine, you and I, Chris, we talk a lot. And mm-hmm. so, and we've known each other. We've been friends for 22 years, and there are still things every day that surprise me. So I think just taking the time to stay curious about the other person would be one thing. Mm-hmm. What do you think? I don't know, Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, for sure. Because, you know, everything you go through in life shapes you or changes you in some way. And I think the moment you stop being curious about your partner is the moment your relationship really starts to endure some damage. I mean, you can't be complacent in where your relationship is. You know, because having kids changes your outlook on life, job changes, moves, major events like this quarantine. Like we're all in the midst of a season of change. And if we don't keep checking in with each other about where we are emotionally and spiritually and mentally, then it's easy to unconsciously drift apart. I think that's essential. And it comes back again to healthy communication and conflict resolution. And the other thing is, Whit and I didn't really talk about this part of it before as we were getting ready for this conversation, but having someone else in your life, specifically if it's a therapist or a pastor who you can go to check things out as a couple, to work through things when things get rough. The healthiest relationships that I see as a pastor are the folks who are not afraid to ask for input, advice, help when they're stuck on something, because every relationship will get stuck on something. Mm-hmm. And when we're too inward looking, when we think that as a couple we can come up with all the answers by ourselves, then I think we're on shaky ground, frankly. You know, early on in our relationship, we went through therapy that was really foundational for the way we show up now, but we still have people we go to for mm-hmm. advice and help and nurture and prayers, love. I mean, all the things that a relationship needs to survive. It does not have to come from just the two partners themselves.
Yeah. And I think we also share, I was just thinking through, you know, there's a lot of great podcasts out there. I'm a huge fan of Brené Brown, Unlocking mm-hmm. Us. And so she's had some really good ones about dealing with quarantine. And so then I'm like, oh, Chris, would you listen to this? And he'll listen to it on the way to church and back. And then we'll talk about it and reflect on it. And so having those conversations, so something shared to either watch, or I'm not a big reader, but if it's short or whatever, we can read it and then both talk about it, I think is also good. I think there's a lot of good resources out there. You know, I mean, I feel that we've done that with movies and TV mm-hmm. shows where we're like, oh, that reminds me of something, and then use that. So having some kind of shared experience that you're both looking into, I think is also important. Mm-hmm. We were just talking, like, we don't really have any hobbies that we do together, right, Chris?
I mean, we exercise. We like to travel. That's kind of off the board. off the board right now, but yeah.
But we do try to have, like, what in the day-to-day times, we try to have some alone experiences and then some shared experiences so that we have something to talk about, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right, as a launching pad for that whole concept of staying curious. Mm-hmm. This Is Us, we would highly recommend.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Parenthood was awesome for those same kind of conversations.
Yeah, it's like thought-provoking stuff that, you know, like a mutual learning experience or entertainment, you know, both. Blake picked out a fun Advent devotional for us that was specifically something that was like written from a perspective that we don't particularly subscribe to. And we specifically chose it because we wanted to have something to kind of discuss critically. Mm-hmm. And so that was actually like the first time we tried something like that. And we also really liked that. Just kind of a small daily bite of even just not an argument, but just a critical discussion of mm-hmm. some sort.
Yeah.
Because we do both like to read, but usually different stuff. So that was a good middle ground.
Yeah, I think having something, you know, I remember when I was first staying home and Chris would go to work all day and come home and I'd be like, tell me everything that happened. Don't leave a moment out. I need something else to think about right now. So like you have to have something to talk about, you know, to what did you think about that? What did you think about that? And go, you know, go back and forth. So,
So something I've heard in this vein of conversation from a few of my wife friends is that they find themselves with spouses who aren't necessarily super interested in sharing or, you know, have kind of like a block up for that sort of investment, be it like visiting a therapist or, you know, doing these quote feely discussions. Any advice for how to connect with a spouse whose first instinct might not be to do those things?
Is that from Whitney's perspective or from mine?
Both. The first thing that pops in my head is, so when we first met, if you did the Myers-Briggs, I was the extrovert and Chris was the introvert. I feel like we're both kind of borderline now. But our phrase when we're having a discussion is, I always say words, please. Like I can see wheels are turning in your head. Could you say some words, please? Like, because I'm an external thinker. So I will say things out loud and then hear them. I go, wait, that's not what I really mean. And I process everything by talking it through. And Chris does not process things by talking it through. He does it all in his head and then says it. And so we've had to come to some common ground about how we process things together. So our phrase, my phrase for him when I need him to say more things is say words, please use words, you know. But I don't know, Chris, if you have better.
Well, I think about when I'm counseling a couple, particularly a young couple or a couple where the guy kind of perceives himself in a stereotypical guy way. And I try to convey to the almost always the man, look, we might not have been raised as men in our society to communicate in this way, to be emotive, to talk about feelings, to be willing to invest in these sort of what could be perceived as softer endeavors. Although if anyone's ever been to therapy, they will immediately know that it's not a soft endeavor. But my encouragement to them is to get over that. Because ultimately the investment that you make in the relationship, is like pays off both in your own spiritual well-being. It pays off in the health of your, relationship, marriage, whatever that is. And also I just think for me, it's a spiritual practice to do relationships in a healthy way. And it just, it is not the path of weakness to make investments of time and energy, even if it's stuff that takes you out of your comfort zone, in your marriage. And ultimately the payoff is more emotional intimacy, a better path through conflict, which we all face. A closer connection to your partner when things get rough, and they will get rough. Even the healthiest relationships go through really rough patches. So I guess what I'm saying is my approach in counseling with couples is to just be very direct that, a healthy relationship requires these things, and figuring out what works best for you and in your relationship is really important.
And like, if you want something to change in your relationship, it's going to feel uncomfortable for a while. Like,
right.
If it's uncomfortable, you're probably doing it right. Right. So, it's not been a perfect scenario, but you have to look at what is and what you want it to be and be willing to do whatever it takes to get there. You know, and there's going to be a turning point for everyone.
I love that. And, you know, that overcomes personality. That overcomes, personal with emotional withholdings. It's a cause and effect, right? Mm. And it's a very spiritual cause and effect. Well, so as we begin to wrap this conversation up, is there anything else that you'd like to leave people with as we kind of put a wrap on part,
yeah,
you know, part one of this topic?
Whit and I were talking about this whole subject, obviously, before we got on with you, and she reminded me of something we heard early on in our relationship, that oftentimes when there's some kind of conflict or crisis facing a couple, what will happen is, picture a big hole, like the hole in this metaphor is the crisis or the conflict. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes we position ourselves on opposite sides of that hole, kind of yelling across the hole about what the other person needs to do to fix whatever it is that's going on. Mm-hmm. And that really helpful image for us early on was when this person said, the best thing to do is to walk around the hole, sit the same side of the problem and look at the problem in front of you, and solve it together, rather than thinking that you're on opposite sides of the problem. And I just think anything that we can do in a relationship to help get us on the same, on the same side, mm-hmm. to remind ourselves that we ultimately want a happy, healthy relationship. And whatever it is, in this case, for the subject for today, the quarantine is a thing in front of us. Well, we're much more likely to be able to solve that problem if we're viewing ourselves as we're on the same team.
Mm-hmm. For sure. I think that's regardless of what it is that we're looking at, whether it's the fact that we have tension or the fact that someone feels lonely or whatever the issue is, we always want to try to approach it from this, that we want the same thing. We're on the same team, you know, mm-hmm. And where it's not here's what you need to do. It's like, here's what I need to do. Here's what I'm asking you to do. That's going to help me. And those things are always really important. I think it's also looking at things in our relationship that aren't helpful. One revolutionary thing for us was sarcasm.
Early on in the relationship, we decided that eliminating sarcasm from our communication was really, really important, because there's a point at which it just becomes what somebody told us once was a socially acceptable form of teasing.
Mm-hmm. No, putting someone down.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. I mean, same thing, but yeah.
Yeah. Like, right. Teasing can be seen as like this fun thing, but really, I mean, a lot of times that was my creative way to resolve a conflict or bring up a conflict was to be really sarcastic about it and tease you about it. And then, but really it's mean. And it's not effective, right? And so trying to eliminate that was really hard, because that was just part of who I felt like I was. But it's been really helpful for our relationship to be sincere about what you're saying, right? I don't know how else to phrase that. But
no, that's right. I mean, that's something we've taught the boys too. I mean, that's not a way that we engage with one another. Just because if you're both in the right mood and the right frame of mind, it's fine. But if one of you is feeling down or angry or stressed or whatever, then it can quickly become just a conflict, even if you did not intend it that way.
I mean, I think that the idea of identifying something, even if it's a part of your personality or how you talk about something, and being willing to adjust that is a great point and reminder. That that's just my personality, or that's just right. isn't good enough. And I think often that is key. You know, I hear that a lot, is, well, I know you want me to do this, but it's just not my personality. So mm-hmm. I'm sorry, that's inaccessible.
right.
Which I think that's really wise. And, you know, as far as conflicts go and walking alongside your friends as you deal with this stuff, what's in y'all's opinion, what's the most helpful way to be a good partner with your friends in their own marriages? I know right now people are kind of zooming or calling people that they haven't gotten to talk to in a long time, and people have been able to spend more time connecting, at least I have with some of my friends. And so, you know, inevitably, especially because people are stuck together, you end up hearing a lot of the complaints or the worries or the hurts. Mm-hmm. In y'all's opinion, what's the best way to be in friendship with other people who are married in that way?
I think personally, for figuring out what I'm looking for, if I'm complaining about something with Chris, like, am I looking to just be heard? Do I want a friend that just will be like, yes, gosh, that's, I hear you, and here's what, how that shows up in my relationship? Or am I really looking for ideas on how to do something different? Because if I am, a lot of times I just like, I'm an extroverted thinker, right? I just mm-hmm. want to say something out loud, and I don't necessarily need a lot of helpful tips on how to make things better. This is true in my relationship with Chris as well. So mm-hmm. he will often ask me, what do you want me to do with this information? You know, I'm like, mm-hmm. you know what? I just want you to listen right now. So that's what I, you know, if I have friends that I can go to that I'm like, you know, I just want you to listen to this. And then there's some that I'm like, I'm really struggling. What has been effective for you? And so getting clear on that, because I'll be honest, like if there's friends that every time I tell you something, you're going to give me helpful tips, then I just don't go talk to you anymore. Right. Because I, right. Like some things I know what I need to do. And when I hear myself say it, I will talk myself around, you know, mm-hmm. Chris and I'll have a conversation. I'm struggling with this. And by the end of it, I'm like, and that's what I need to do. And he's like, you're welcome. You know, glad I could be so helpful. So, I think, I don't know if that's for me, that's what's helpful with friends, is just getting clear on, so what are you, how can I be most help to you? Just listen, or do you want to, you know, do you want to know what works for me, or?
Yeah, I would say the same, but I would say the same thing. Unless, so my role now for the past 20 years has been different. I do have some friends who are able to set aside the pastor reverend thing. But most people kind of only see me in that role anymore. But I don't want to say never, because I probably do it from time to time, but I strive very, very hard never to give unsolicited advice. Mm. So I think what everyone needs, I think what we all need, is people in our lives who will listen to us and love us and don't feel the need to fix us. Mm. And unless we're specifically asking, you know, there are people in my life, if I'm having a particularly difficult conflict with Whit, or I'm having a challenge with the boys or something at the church, I'll ask them for their advice. And if I don't ask, then I don't really want input. I just want them to listen. Mm-hmm. And so I think as a young couple, as a couple starting out, having lots of people in our lives to be that listener, I think is vital. But then whoever our trusted folks are that we think have something that we want, whether that's wisdom about relationships or serenity and peace or, their own healthy marriage that we think works for them, that we can specifically ask for advice. I think that's probably those are my ground rules. Mm-hmm.
Now, that's exactly what I wanted to hear. It was just mostly as a 2 on the Enneagram, I always feel like I need to fix everything. So the permission to not is fantastic.
So I should say that Whitney and I are both 1s on the Enneagram.
And super fun house.
Yeah. So that means that we are wired to see what's wrong. Like the 1 is a perfectionist, right? Mm-hmm. So it's the context of my not wanting unsolicited advice is surely colored by the fact that my inclination is to give it all the time, like right. the way I naturally show up in the world. And so, you know, it's been really important spiritual work for me to dial that back, and whatever I might be thinking in my head about any particular given situation probably needs to go through the filter of compassion and restraint, you know?
Yeah. So. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, y'all are both 1s. Me and Blake are both 2s. We're just constantly mm-hmm. trying to outdo each other all the time. No, I love you more. Love this. Which is so great and so painful.
I mean, the good news is you know how each other communicates and thinks.
Yeah.
The bad news is that you know how each other communicates and thinks, right? You show up exactly the same way. So
exactly. And for all you folks out there, our next Enneagram class is upcoming.
Right, exactly.
So that you can figure out what your spouse is thinking. Which, look, I can't recommend it enough, though, right? Well, Chris and Whitney, thank you so much for sharing some of your time with me and with all of us. I'm so happy to get to share both of you in just a normal conversation with our community.
Thanks. We really appreciate the invitation.
Yes, of course. And for those of you out there who are listening who might want to ask a follow-up question or figure out how to get connected to that Enneagram class or maybe even some time to sit down and talk about your relationship up at the church, you can email Chris and I'll include their emails in the text of wherever these podcasts are found. And they'll either get you an answer or connect you with someone else who can help you. So thanks again, guys.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Ashley.
Thanks, Ashley.
So I hope all of you out there remember to just take it one day at a time, to lean on God every time you can, and show yourself a little bit of love and grace too. We love you so much. Talk to you soon.